Hello guys, and welcome to the latest edition of the Black Spin Global Podcast. I'm Eugene.
And I'm Lucy.
And yeah guys, welcome to the latest episode. How are you doing, Lucy?
Fine, I am tired after my first, I can't even say night out because I got home at like 10, 11.
I was going to say, actually, before we start, actually, congratulations, Miss Bestseller Cookbook.
I'm dead.
That fantastic cookbook that came out. Was it on the 9th of April, I believe?
Yes, 9th of April.
Fantastic. And like, yeah, just congrats because it looks amazing. And like some great recipes in there.
Yeah, it did really well. A lot of people copped the book, so thank you to you guys. And if you haven't, you know what to do. Yeah, man, it's been a very tiring week, but we're here. That's what that matters. How about you?
Yeah, same. Before I interrupted you, you said you're out and about, basically.
Yeah, for those who are not in the UK, we're now kind of back to freedom. Gyms open, shops
small.
Outdoor restaurants.
Thank
open.
God.
So I was out yesterday. This is why we're recording this a bit earlier because tomorrow I'm out again in the streets. My name is going to be Lucy Street this summer. I'm going to be out there. So, Eugene, be ready if I'm going to come and tell you, can we record another day? Because I am going to be out and about.
Just mashing up the schedule. But no, it's all good.
Yes. Just for a little bit. And then I'll be back to my grandma mode.
No, it's cool.
What about you? Are you planning to hit the street soon?
To be honest, it's quiet. It's quiet out here. I am looking to play some tennis, though, which is good. So,
do you know what? I thought of it today because the weather today was really nice.
Yeah. So it's really nice. Like summer's coming basically. So looking to make the most of that. But yeah, man, let's get into the show. So we'll start off by doing a quick roundup. So we had events take place in Charleston two weeks ago now. So when we were last on, we spoke about the Volvo Car Open that was about to commence, but yeah, we did speak about Coco Gauff and Sloane Stephens. They both made deep runs, both got to the quarterfinals. Just like kind of, I think for Gauff, she's definitely like had a really good start to the year.
Yeah.
So she ended up losing to Ons Jabeur in the quarters. And Stephens, she ended up losing to the eventual champion, Vronika Kudermetova. And yeah, it was just really great. I really enjoyed that whole event in Charleston.
I
think the players really enjoyed playing there as well. It's just a nice, nice kind of vibe.
It's different. Yeah, it's a different vibe as well.
On the green clay. So that was Charleston that was wrapped up. Last week we had the Monte Carlo Masters. And before that event started, actually, we had Felix Auger-Aliassime announce Tony Nadal was joining the team, which is
clap, 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 clap.
Very, very exciting.
I think a lot of people were excited about that.
Yeah, so much press around it.
It's big.
Because I think as well, and I would be interested to get your take, like I think that signifies like basically, Felix's intent in terms of like wanting to take his game to the next level. And I just think it's very exciting going forward. I don't know what you think.
Yeah, exactly, because he knows he has it. I think he just needs to figure out what he needs to do, figure out how he can get to, because he knows how to get far ahead. He knows how to play really well.
Yeah,
I think now it's just about, having that extra knowledge, that extra help, and who else from one of the big three camps and stuff. So, his playing style on clay as well, could really work well. So having someone like him would definitely help. So I'm looking forward to it. Players are shook. You saw Francis comment on his IG post. He's like, damn, you're about to win all clay now. I don't want to play against you now on clay. And it's like,
I did like that message.
I like seeing that because it just shows to you that not only are fans excited, but it shows to you that, players as well look at these things thinking, like, rah. There's probably some players who even got jealous, like, rah. Like,
oh, definitely.
Tony don't want me. And it's like, because you ain't that good.
Because did you read or see Tony's quotes when he was asked about, so what happens when Felix plays Rafa?
Yeah, he says that Nick is not going to be there.
Yeah, he said he won't watch. Like, he won't be in any camp, basically.
Yeah,
like,
any camp. So, or, yeah, which is very funny. Yeah, it's very, very funny.
That's going to be very interesting to see how that plays out.
But do you reckon that he had a talk with Nadal first?
Well, I'm going to say yes, because obviously he's like he runs the Rafa Nadal Academy. So
true,
and he's
yeah.
already said he did say that yeah this will not affect like the work he does at the academy.
Yeah, because a lot of people were raising that it's not gonna happen, blah blah blah.
So I think it will work pretty well. I think he's only gonna like be with him or travel with him to like Grand Slams and like certain like Masters events. So yeah, and a lot of players these days like have two coaches. Like it's not a thing.
Yeah, like, exactly. Yeah. So 100%.
Yeah, I mean. You could say, or some people were saying, oh, like, it didn't get off to the best start because obviously Felix lost in the first round in Monte Carlo.
I mean, come on, he had the first match.
Exactly,
like,
and it was a rain-interrupted match as well, so that's never ideal.
Yeah. I wasn't too thinking about that. I don't know why people made it a big deal.
Yeah, and, like, Christian Garin, he's a really good clay court player, so, like, that wasn't a massive shock to me. But... To be fair, there were a few surprises in Monte Carlo. So Rafa Nadal and Novak Djokovic, who were the top seeds, or I think Nadal was the third seed, both made fairly early exits. So it was Dan Evans that beat Novak.
Do you know what? It was so funny because when I saw that match, I was like, do I support Novak's? Do I support a Torg? Which one do we go for? But... Yeah, congrats to Dan Evans. I guess it was a very successful thing for him. Like, you know, he was everywhere. Like, everyone was just talking about him and everything. So you could see that he was very, I don't know, lately he's been
getting
he's
it
been,
in.
In it. Yeah. So let's see how it goes.
And then Rafa losing to Andre Rublev, who's like
one
of my favorites. Like, yeah.
The Russians are on it, fam.
Serious.
It's
very
Putin
serious.
Putin probably told them, hey, if Med is out, Rublev,
step it up.
Step it up, because as you know, Med tested positive.
Of course, yeah. Speed of recovery to Medvedev as well.
Yeah, I really hope, because he was someone who is against the vaccine. But he's I was really looking forward to seeing, because he's another player where I feel like it's so funny because he hates clay.
Yeah.
He said that he doesn't like playing on clay. Yet, I bet you any money, if this guy plays on clay, he will literally win it, because his playing style is absolutely insane. And it will be so fun to see him the way he plays on clay. So yeah, hope he gets better soon, man, because this virus is crazy. But a funny thing that happened about that was how when they announced it and everyone was like, is Nadal okay? You people have some shame, man. Like, come on, my guy caught COVID and you're asking about Nadal. Like, look where Nadal
is.
Yeah, because he practiced with Nadal like a day before they announced it. But yeah, that wasn't too nice, guys. Come on.
But yeah, as we're recording this on a Saturday, so the semi-finals have just been played. So it's going to be Stefanos Tsitsipas versus Rublev in the final.
Who do you have?
I'm going to go Rublev.
Okay.
You don't seem sure. Who are you going with?
I don't know to go with. The reason why I'm hesitating is because Rublev has been playing really nice. But Tsitsipas actually really great on clay.
Yeah.
And Tsitsipas apparently he has I know you don't like this, but he has like this whole winning streak on Masters Finals. So he's never lost any of his Masters Finals. I think I saw a tweet on that. So yeah, so there's another thing. So that's why I'm a bit stuck. But
I don't know if he's won the Masters, because I think this will be the first time. This will be a first time Masters 1000 winner.
Then maybe I'm getting it wrong.
Because they play.
I don't know. All I know, he has some sort of streak, and that's why it's another big deal. I don't know which one it is specifically, but I remember reading it.
They played each other in the final. I think it was Hamburg last year, and Rublev won.
And that, I think, but that's hard court, right?
No, I think it was clay, and I think that's where Rublev's like win streak started, as in in finals. So like
then maybe it's Rublev that
I don't think he's lost a final
okay
since basically, yeah, winning in Hamburg.
But is Rublev good on clay?
What do you mean? He just took out Nadal, like, in three sets. So
true. That was his... Yeah, that's true. So, but you know what? The thing is, I think it's because of me. It's like, I feel like if you're going to beat... I feel like I find it a bigger deal to beat Nadal on clay during the French Open.
But then a Grand Slam. People have said that. I just think
it's still a big deal, yeah, because he's the king of clay. Like, clay season is Rafa season. I get it. He's the big deal. When you think of clay, you think of him. But I think he's one of them players. Well, I feel like just like any other players, he would probably put more his heart and energy into something if it's the Grand Slam. Like, I don't think he really cares if you lose a Monte. Do you get what I mean?
It's a Masters 1000.
Yeah, true. And I don't know.
He's got a silly record in Monte Carlo as well. But I hear what you're saying. Like, it's not the French Open, so
yeah. But it is a big deal.
It's a massive deal, definitely.
Yeah.
And I like this. Like, yeah, these new champions that we're getting. I think it's really exciting.
They had enough, man. They're like, you know what?
Yeah, I'm sorry, man. It's exciting because it was getting boring. The same old winners.
It was 100%
over and over and over again.
100%. It's nice to see them finally step up.
Yeah, man. So yeah, shouts out to Rublev and Tsitsipas. Obviously, the final would have been played by the time you listen to this, but yeah, we also had the Billie Jean Cup, Billie Jean, take place over. I had to get that in. I'm sorry.
We're naming that the name of the thing. This is gonna be the name of that episode, Billie Jean.
So yeah, we had the playoffs taking place late last week, so Friday and Saturday, and just a massive shout out to Heather Watson, who secured her 22nd win, which is, I think, she's second all time now for Great Britain for singles wins. So a very good look for Heather, and yeah, Great Britain did end up beating Mexico, so they're now through to they've got a qualifying spot for the main event next year.
Nice.
And I think Jasmine Paolini, she was playing for Italy as well. She did lose her singles rubber, but Italy, they're also through. So yeah, shouts out to Paolini and Heather Watson. Away from tennis, or away from the court even, the Serena Williams TV deal with Amazon. I don't know if you know much about that. Like, it was kind of spoken about briefly last
week. Yeah. I saw it everywhere on my TL.
So, yeah, she signed this, like, big deal with Amazon Prime, I believe, which includes a docuseries on her personal and professional life. And I do remember, actually, at the Australian Open, there was talk about, like, a camera crew, like, following her around. And she was, like, she was quite tight-lipped about what was going on, but she was like, oh yeah, like, something's in the works kind of thing. So clearly that's what...
This Australian Open?
Yeah, this year, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm excited. Obviously, Serena's a legend, and like, it's going to be exciting to see whatever that kind of... I love sport documentaries in general as well, so...
Yeah, I like documentaries in general.
I think it's going to be very exciting to see what that kind of, entails. And I think there's... We've got one to look forward to from Osaka too.
I think the reason why that one was on, I think that one was more like a prepped on like her road to the Olympics,
and I
think that's why it was a bit.
Yeah,
it was put on hold because I was with Netflix as well.
Yeah,
which I don't mind because now you know she's bigger than before, meaning we'll get more people tuning in. They get to know her more. You know, she's. I think she's a different type of journey compared to last year.
Like, added a slam.
Two grand slam. Two, not even one.
It's a true story, exactly.
Because it started at the beginning of last year. So she bagged the US Open and she bagged this Australian Open. So, you know, it's a whole different thing. She's more confident, you know, she's more out there. So.
And it's less than 100 days now to the Olympics, which is quite exciting. So
it's actually still happening.
Yeah, but just reduced... crowd.
No, they said no fans.
I think no fans from outside Japan.
Outside of, so only Japanese people can go.
Which is a bit sad, but I mean, at least there'll be some fans. And the event is happening. So it's good for the athletes taking part, basically.
Do you know what? I really think they should have just postponed it again. I'm not going to lie to you.
Lucy.
No, because it's going to be another, like, someone's going to catch COVID and
No, don't say that. We're not putting
and
that.
Then they have to self-isolate.
Don't put it out, like, there. That's not happening.
I know. But I will prefer having an event running that's a bit more normal and going smoothly.
Because to be honest, by, what was that, June, July, like, we should be in a much better state in terms of, like, globally with this whole pandemic.
But you need to remember, this is a worldwide thing.
I know.
From different type of world. Like, let's say, for example, there's one person who played, who could have done really well, but they in a country where the cases are, like, crazy. Like, someone, for example, someone who's from India right now is fucked because they have 250,000 cases.
Oh, I don't want to turn this into a COVID pod. I hear what you're saying.
I know, but I personally would have preferred if it was moved to at least one more year, but, you know. It's cost a lot of money and needs to get done at the end of the day.
Oh, exactly. So yeah, that kind of concludes our roundup. Next, I want to talk about a WTA debutante that made her debut on the WTA tour last week now, in Charleston again, because Charleston had the Volvo Car Open, which is a WTA 500 event, the week before. And then, last week they had the MUSC Health Women's Open. Bit of a mouthful. Mm-hmm. But that was a WTA 250. That's where Alicia Parks, a 20-year-old American, made her WTA Tour debut. So she won through qualifying. And we tweeted about this and posted on our socials. I was so impressed with, like, her play. So in the first round, she took on Grace Min, I think she also qualified, American as well, a fellow qualifier. Parks won in straight sets. And I was just really impressed with, like, her game. Like, I think she's like 6'2", just carries herself like that. She's got such great, like, on-court, like, demeanor. Carries herself with, like, a confidence that kind of suggests that she's been playing on tour for a minute. Like, and I was really taken aback by that. So in the second round, she ended up playing the top seed, Uns Jabeur, which is, like, a tough draw, obviously. And she made a really good start. So she was 4-2 up in the first set. Jabeur just, like, upped her level and he didn't lose a game after that. So she ended up winning 6-4. Jabeur ended up winning 6-4, 6-love. I was just, like, super impressed with Parks, like, in terms of just the progress that she's kind of made. Because obviously she's 20 years old, and in sporting terms, that's not young. But, you know, in life, she's a young woman. Like, so to kind of see her literally break through in Charleston, hopefully we see more of her going forward. And I want to say she was the 15th player to make her WTA Tour debut this year. Because I think there's been like 15 WTA debutantes this year, so it's always exciting to see new names, basically. And obviously she's a black girl, so we wish her rooting for her going forward. We've also, on this episode, we've got a special guest that will be joining us. So Miles Daly, who's a LTA qualified coach. He's going to be joining us and just talking about, like, his journey into coaching basically the LTA's idea group, which is formed at the start of the year, that he's also part of. So I hope you guys enjoy this interview. If we could just get into it, like, how old are you when you first picked up a racket?
When I first picked up a racket, I think I was like maybe 7. It wasn't too young, but it also wasn't too late. I think I was about 7 years old,
And, like, what were, like, your kind of, like, aspirations, like, as you, well, when you were playing, like, when you started out? Because I take it you probably picked up at, like, school or...
Yeah. So, I'm not entirely sure, like, what the deal was, but I know that, Hackney City Tennis Clubs, because I was born and raised in Hackney, they went around to all the local schools and they did, like, one taster session with all, like, the kids in the schools. And then they kind of just picked the kids that they thought had some kind of ability and invited them to after school sessions, and then after that they went and did like a tournament, and I got to the semi-finals in the tournament, so I won like a term worth of free tennis coaching, and the rest is history, I guess.
Nice. So was that like mini tennis you were playing like at that time, or was it full
court? I want to say that we were definitely on full court, but say that now it would have probably been orange now.
Which is, just to explain what orange is, so that's...
So when you have like the juniors, you start them out on like a red ball, which is like soft compression ball, and it's a smaller court. Then an orange ball is slightly smaller, but still not as bouncy as a normal ball on the full size court, but with smaller parameters to play with. And then you move to green and then yellow, which is adult.
Yeah. Oh, wicked. So like you kind of, I guess you worked your way up gradually then, like, yeah. Oh, cool. And I mean, playing as a junior, like, were there many blacks like playing as well, or were you like basically one of very few, I'm assuming?
Surprisingly, there's actually quite a few.
Oh, really?
And maybe it was just because it was Hackney, I don't know, but yeah. I could probably name five, including myself. Probably about seven or eight, including myself, who definitely played. Coaches, there was one black coach. But there was like a good five and eight tennis players that were of colour, and we all actually still are in contact now, which is pretty cool.
Nice.
And quite a few of us are still within tennis as well, so that's a pretty good thing.
And like kind of as a kid as well, like when you were, I take it you watched tennis growing up. Like who were some of the players that you kind of like looked up to?
The Williams sisters obviously were like everything that we kind of aspired to as kids. And I think I also like watched a lot of Pete Sampras. I remember looking at him and thinking like, wow, I honestly as a child thought that Pete Sampras was a personal player.
Greek, his background, Greek, yeah.
Right. Yeah, I was convinced that he was like a personal player. So I was like, wow, like, he looked like me. But obviously found out he wasn't. I also thought Agassi was a personal player. I don't know, maybe I just didn't like connect the dots. Yeah. But definitely the Williams sisters, and Pete Sampras and Andre Agassi. And then when I like really got into like tennis watching and loving, it was all about James Blake for me. Like he was the guy that I aspired to be like, and I just thought he was the best thing in the world.
Oh, cool. So again,
just to clarify, yeah, you're right, Eugene, his dad or mom is, they're both Greek, I think.
Oh, Sampras. Mm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because he does have that like, what's the word, like Mediterranean look.
Yeah.
Kind of look, yeah.
No, really, really interesting, Miles. So again, like with you playing, like did you ever kind of aspire to like make it pro, or was that never really an option?
This is where like my relationship with tennis gets a little bit complicated. And I don't want to like talk negatively about any of like the coaching experiences that I have had. I think it was made very clear to me and a few of the other like kids of colour that as kids of colour, it was going to be difficult for us. And, you know, it was suggested for me that maybe I just pick up a sport like football, or maybe I go and do something like athletics or something like that. And I never really understood what it meant at that time. Now on reflection, it was kind of like, you know, you're a kid of colour, you're from a single parent household, you probably don't have the finances or the income to pay for 3, 4, or 5 lessons a week, especially not individuals. Go kick a ball because you can do that. It's more accessible. It's cheaper. It's easier to do. You know, I'm pretty quick. So it was like, oh, maybe athletics might be for him. So I always wanted to play pro. Like I always wanted to travel the world and play tennis. But it was kind of like told to me that that wasn't a possibility in the slightest.
Yes.
When I was young.
And who were those people who were telling you? Was it like the people from... Okay, no, I'm not like directly snitching or something, but when I mean people, I mean like, was it like in the tennis environment type of thing? Was it family? Was it friends? Like what? Like
It was definitely coaches. Like it was definitely... it was just coaches. It was coaches and anyone that was around the like organisation.
The industry, okay.
Yeah, wow. And I think as well... For me, like I remember I played a few tournaments when I was like a young teenager, and I went by myself. And I didn't realize that, you know, a lot of other kids would be going with their families, with their coaches. I was there with my backpack, with my two rackets, my trainers, you know, and it was super intimidating for me because, you know, I wasn't ever prepared or told that, you know, like your coaches actually travel sometimes with the kids or, you know, your parents would be there supporting you. I was just kind of told, oh, if you like going to play tennis, go play a tournament. No prep, nothing. And I mean, I did okay, but it just wasn't, it was never an environment that I felt like I would thrive in because I wasn't prepared for it. So I wanted to play, like I really wanted to go. And then when I kind of realized that maybe that wasn't for me, my next goal was to try and get into college tennis in America.
Okay.
Was the next goal for me. But, you know, I think tennis is one of those sports that if you don't have the backing or you don't have someone that really believes in you or is pushing you like to really be your best, it's such a hard game to get into. Yeah. So,
No, that's incredible. Like, quite sad to hear, to be fair, because, that's not something you'd really want any kind of kid to, like, experience, especially if they're, like, really trying to chase a dream. Like, you would think they'd be, like, encouraged, like, from coaches, but that's quite sad. Like, how old were you when this was told? Like, were you, like, in your teens or was it, like, younger?
I want to say between, like, the ages of 11 and 14, because I definitely stopped playing tennis at 14. Yeah, so it's between 11 and 14.
And that's like, they're like crucial years as well, like those early teenage years, because that's when you start to make like real kind of jump, like real improvements and like elevations in your game. So I take it then coaching was something that you start to think about like later on, like in your teens, or when did that kind of idea come into your head, like to become a coach?
It didn't. I never even knew that that was like a thing.
Oh, really?
You know, I knew that I had coaches, but in my head as a kid, I think that tennis, to me, the only way you made money was by being the tennis player. Mm. I didn't really think about the fact that tennis players have teams and those teams have coaches in them. They have trainers, they have physios. You've got people that like run the tennis tournaments. You've got all these different, you know, people involved in the sport that help or that can make money. So I didn't even think about coaching as a way. When I stopped playing tennis, I kind of went more into music. Okay. And I was doing music for ages. And then one of the kids who I actually played tennis with when I was younger, so we used to play doubles together, she actually continued on her pathway to becoming a coach. So she was a level 2 going on 3 coach at the time. And she was like, hey, like, come down, take a lesson and just see how it goes. And so I picked up a racket. It was like my first time playing tennis in like 7 years. And the head coach saw me and was like, are you free tomorrow morning? Come and teach a class for me. And here I am, 5 years later, still coaching tennis. So, yeah.
So is that like your main kind of job, as in career-wise? Is that like you class yourself as a tennis coach?
Definitely during the pandemic, I've been coaching like crazy. Well, obviously when we can.
Yeah.
You know? yeah. I mean, I go back and forth between music and tennis. And I think that was another thing as well, is that, you know, as a child, like I was never really told that I could have other interests or passions besides the sport of tennis, and that you couldn't really have your own personality, your own like goals and dreams and ideals of what you want to do with your life besides, you know, being there training 6 days a week. And it, as an adult now, I can kind of see how tennis is such a big passion in someone's life, but they can also be interested in photography, or they can also be interested in, you know, other sports. It doesn't just have to be like, your focus is this, and anything that's outside of that mold isn't accepted within tennis.
Yeah.
So, you know, tennis has been my main income for the last however many years. I've traveled across so many different places and coached in different countries and stuff, but I also do music and tennis hand in hand and have found a way to make it work.
Oh, fantastic. Because one of the main reasons why we've got you on is to talk about the LTA idea group that they established, I think it was earlier this year now. So basically the group was established to help drive inclusion and diversity in tennis, in British tennis anyway. If you can talk a bit about like the group and like kind of how you kind of came on board.
I'm coaching at two different venues. I coach predominantly in Stratford, which is right by the Olympic Park. So I'm in an area called Newham. So for anyone who doesn't really know what Newham is about, it's extremely diverse in terms of the ethnic population. It's like super Black, super Asian, but then you've also got like Chinese people, Eastern European. There's a lot of, you know, diversity in the area because it's literally right next to the Olympic Park. And I also coach at Bromley Tennis Centre as well. So I get to kind of see both sides of it. And in Newham, I am the only coach of colour that works in Newham. I think I'm potentially the only coach of colour that works for the entire company that I work for.
Wow.
And so when the LTA kind of reached out, so the company I work with, they're affiliated with the LTA. So when they reached out to our company, it was suggested that I kind of go on board for this thing. And I was like super hesitant about it because like we've kind of touched on, I've had my experiences within the sport of tennis and felt like I was pushed to the side because I was a person of colour, because I came from a lower income background. And so when the opportunity kind of came around, I just thought, well, it's better to try and see whether you can make some kind of change within the thing that you love or the sport that you love, as opposed to just kind of say, like, we're not going to do it at all. Mm. So I had like a lot of back and forth with my area manager, and my opinion on it was kind of like, I felt like they should have sent a person who wasn't of color to kind of go and get that education and that learning about what it is like in a world where diversity, inclusion, equality isn't guaranteed, you know, and it does affect you directly. But yeah, so I just kind of jumped on board. And to be honest with you, it's actually been a really good thing. Like, they've interviewed me loads. I've done so many interviews and stuff and spoken a lot about my thoughts and feelings about the lack of diversity and inclusion in the sport of tennis. And it's actually been pretty good so far.
So yeah, do you think the group is like effective in terms of like, do you think it will bring about like the change that the LTA is looking for?
Yeah, it will bring about the change. I just don't know. I'm not entirely sure what area it's going to affect first, because, you know, from my lens, I'm more passionate about people of color and I'm more passionate about driving more women in tennis. I think those are two areas that I just don't see enough representation of. But then you've got people from the other side of it, where it's more about disability tennis, where it's more about, you know, increasing the number of LGBTQIA plus people within the sport. There are so many different areas crying out for inclusion. There's such a lack of diversity across the board. I feel like within a sport like tennis, which by nature is quite elitist, we just don't really know like what area is going to kind of push first. But yes, I do believe that there is going to be better across the board.
That's quite positive, I guess.
I do want to kind of say something maybe off record. you might want to cut this but you know, like, we kind of touched on this before where we were like, you know, it would have been better, not saying that, I mean, we love that, you know, the whole group at the end stuff, but I think it would have been better if we had it, you know, focusing Black people, focusing on the LGBTQ plus community, focusing on disabilities, focusing on, do you get what I mean? I think that's why, for example, you have a lot of people, that's why they're against the whole BAME, BAM situation, because it's like Black and Asians are we're all facing different type of issues. But I kind of feel like they don't actually understand that at all. Maybe, I don't know, maybe it's a thing where they just don't see it, or they don't hear us out when we're complaining about that bit specifically. You know, just because we're minority doesn't mean that we're all the same. We all face different things. But at the end of the day, we do need to remember, if you're white and a male and you come from a good background, you've got good money and everything, you're never going to understand that or see that. But I think that's why I understand why you were saying you guys are not too sure which area would touch first. But so Eugene, decide if you want to put this in or not.
I think that's completely valid, Lucy.
You know, like 100%. But the thing is, I know you're saying, you know, off topic or whatever, that makes me feel better to kind of really openly express how I feel about the group itself, because I do think it's a great thing. And I think a lot of coaches, there's a couple of other coaches of colour that I know, and there's a couple of coaches in general that I know in there, and I've spoken to them directly, and actually they're kind of not really 100% on board with the idea. And I think it is because of this. I think it is because, you know, when it was pitched to me, it was pitched off of the back of BLM. And I felt like, why does it have to come off the back of BLM? We have so many tennis players of colour, whether we're talking within the UK, whether we're talking about like Heather Watson. I read a stat here that she's the second most successful Fed Cup player in this country.
After Friday's win,
I don't see Heather Watson on my television screens. I think I've seen her on there, you know, when she was advertising for I want to say Tampax are always one of those two. Like, that actually wasn't tennis related. Like, they weren't pushing her forward. Wow. But yet, like, for years, and we still continue, and I'm not saying that she shouldn't, she's a talent, but we still hear about Laura Robson. And you can't help but feel like that has to be just down to the fact that they feel that as a person of colour, she's less marketable or she's less likely to be pushed forward. And the question is, why? And so I do think that when we're talking about equality, when we are talking about lack of diversity, there are so many different areas that that is being broken down into. And as a person of colour, my struggle is different to that of a person who is disabled 100%. Or works within disability tennis. And mm-hmm. that is to that person of a person who is... you know, part of the LGBTQIA plus community. And then you've got to think, what about the people who actually touch all three of those bases or two of those bases? So there are so many different things that you've got to kind of break down. And I'm not entirely sure whether lumping them all into one is the best thing. But I do recognize that it's something at this point in terms of driving positive change forward.
So no, I think you make really great points, the two of you, to be fair. And that's something I want to ask, like, is, have the LTA basically said to you as well that they're kind of, they want input like from you in terms of like maybe direction as to where, you know, they can take this? Or is it just a thing of, okay, this is what we're doing, and like you just have to like follow this kind of blueprint that they've set out?
There's been a lot of conversation, which I think is healthy, and we've had two meetings so far, and we've had like a few emails bouncing back and forward. And what they've tended to do so far is come to us with a plan and say, this is what we think is the best way to create change across the board. And then it's almost like first view, and then we give our feedback off of that. And they do, to be honest, they do seem completely open to criticism, to critique. It does seem to be quite a healthy situation to be in. I know that personally for me, I don't know what I had said in the first meeting. I must have said something that really like struck a chord with them, but they reached out to me personally to get more information about my thoughts and feelings, which led to, you know, them putting things that I had said directly to them on the LTA website. Fantastic. And I kind of was featured them there. And I think that that was validation for why I did it in the first place. And then that led to, you know, the Voice newspaper article. So it is good. They are listening and they do want to hear what people have to say, because we were all picked for a reason. It wasn't like, you know, we just walked in and said we're going to do it. They know our backgrounds. They know, you know, not everyone's a coach. Some people are into different things, but it's all around tennis. And, you know, they have listened so far. It's just going to be interesting to see how much change that affects across the sport.
Yeah, no, that's really, that's really interesting. And just finally, like, have you, and this is, it's an open-ended question, I guess, but since like you started playing tennis, and like you kind of touched on it earlier, like how, because you come from or you grew up in quite a diverse neighborhood or area, you did see a lot of blacks like playing. But have you, would you say like you've maybe seen the landscape of tennis change, like from when you started to like today basically? Or is it something that kind of has remained the same, if that makes sense?
Is that like a UK landscape?
Yeah,
is that like
to be fair, UK specifically. But then, yeah, you could expand and say maybe globally.
Not in the UK, not yet. Not really. I don't think that the kids that I teach, if I said to them, you know, who are your favourite tennis players? Which tennis players do you resonate with? None of them are British. Mm. Andy Murray is the one that is obviously a consistent. And the white children, the white boys, I expect them to Andy Murray 100%. They should. It's a reflect, like what I want for tennis. I want my tennis world, my ideal tennis world, to look like the world that I see when I roam around it. You know, I want it to reflect the life that I live. And as a white child, a white male, to see Andy Murray do so well, 100%, it makes sense. But there isn't a black female tennis player that's doing really well in this country for the little black girls to kind of, you know, look up to. There isn't even really, as far as I can think of, a tennis player of Asian descent, really, that, you know, like my Asian students can like look towards or look forward to. They're telling me, you know, I love Naomi Osaka. And I think that is amazing because she is amazing. Mm. And I think that we should be celebrating Osaka, celebrating, you know, Serena, all these big players. But within our you know, UK tennis world, whatever you want to call it. No, yeah. I don't feel like, because like I said, you've got someone like Heather Watson, who is literally here. Can you guys see me?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. You've got someone like Heather Watson who, yeah, she's not, you know, winning Grand Slam in singles, but she's still a representation of what can be achieved by people of colour. 100%. And we don't see her. You know, the wheelchair tennis players, I can't even tell you really their names off the top of my head. You know, that it's just not good enough. I don't feel like there isn't enough of it. So no, in the UK, my answer is no. Across the board and like across the world, yeah, but UK, no.
So, I think there's also a lack of exposure in tennis in general, first of all, even, especially for our own British players, unless they're winning. So I haven't seen Dan Evans' name so much in my life this entire week because he beat Djokovic and he got all the way to the semifinals, if I'm correct. Yeah. Even... I remember Konta did really well 2 years ago at the French Open. I think she was the first British woman tennis player to reach like the quarterfinals of French Open.
Yeah, yeah.
Or semis or something like that. And literally it was like a little small square or something like that. Paper. Yeah. So I think there's that first of all as well, because I feel like in the British media, when it comes to supporting our own, is very tactical. It's very like, if you're winning, cool. Like, they're giving a lot of shits to Andy Murray now, right now, for example. But it's like, we don't have any. And plus, we're even lucky to even call Andy Murray British, because the guy is Scottish. He's just representing us. You get what I mean? So, like, once he's done, we don't have, like, anyone like him that was as big as him. Do you get what I mean? So... So can you imagine the fact that we're dealing with that issue, and then for us as like Black people or women or whatnot? So yeah, it's a shame, and I think we do have the potential. You know, we host the biggest sports event ever. Wimbledon's like the best Grand Slam of all time. Like everyone don't watch tennis even. Yeah, it's the most respected event ever. So it's like we have so much opportunity, so many things, and it's like I feel like we're just throwing it away, and hopefully that will improve.
I do feel like though, by them, you know, doing stuff like the LTA idea group, you know, and really trying to get more people of color from different backgrounds or whatever into the sport, they are essentially trying to widen the pool that we can eventually pick from.
Yeah.
And my long-term hope is that within like 7 to 10 years, we do have more tennis players who are household names who come from a variety of backgrounds, because purely as a result of them widening the pool, you know? There is something to be said about people achieving things in spaces that they were told that they couldn't achieve them in, and it drives them harder and it pushes them further. We don't have players who come from those stories in this country, and hopefully we will see that soon. And then it'll be reflected in our commentators, podcasters, broadcasting, all of those things. Like, even if you just look down to the people who commentate the sport, it's like you're hearing one voice, you're not hearing a variety of voices, you know? And so that's why, like, your platform, you know, when I spoke to the guy from the Voice newspaper, he was a Black guy who reached out to me as well. It is people of color that are really trying to get into this world and make it a thing that is more known, make it a thing that is bigger. I want our tennis players to be, I'm not saying that they're going to be like David Beckham level, but let's not push it, but I want them to be household names. You know, I want people to be able to say more than Murray and Murray's brother, you know, and that kind of stuff, you know.
Before we let you go, Mars, like, again, it's been really good talking to you, but something you said about wanting to increase like the participation of women as well in the sport, like, can you talk a bit about that as well? Because I thought that was really interesting. Because for me personally right now, Lucy, I think you would agree, like, the WTA is probably the strongest brand.
It's taking over.
Right now.
At this moment,
compared to the ATP.
But I do understand what Miles is saying. Because, for example, I feel like you have to be a tennis fan for you to understand that the WTA is doing better. But from outside, if you're not really... Yeah. You might think the opposite. Why? Because you have the big freeze. you know, and people who don't watch tennis don't really understand with, like, you know, what's going on. For example, a lot of people are like saying, oh, Serena is that, but for example, they don't know that Serena is not the type of person that plays a lot of tournaments, you know, this type of stuff. So I kind of get what he's saying, but I feel like for us it's very easy to say, yeah, the WTA is doing fine, but from outside it's like, no, ATP still winning because I'm still seeing Djokovic and Nadal win. Yeah, and it's not like they're, not only they're still playing, they're winning. They're still being serious.
Just about.
The
last last 2 weeks have been wild for me in like Minnesota.
If you just speak about the women participation, like, and you wanting to increase that.
Yeah. Me personally, I actively watch the WTA tour more than I watch the ATP tour. I just think it's more, there's more variety in it. It's more unpredictable. It's, I just enjoy it more. And I do agree with you, Lucy, in that, you know, in the tennis world, you know that the WTA tour is where it's at right now in terms of just entertainment. You just don't know what's going to happen. And I do, again, to say this, what I want to see in my tennis landscape, I want to see what I see in the world reflected in the world of tennis. And I think that women should be everywhere in any way. It shouldn't just be a male-dominated sport. I don't understand why it still is. You know, you've got amazing women within, like, the UK, like Jo Ward, for example. I don't know if you know, she was like number two in the UK. Yeah. She's completely changing the coaching structure across the LTA, like the LTA coach structure. And I don't understand why we don't, how we don't, you know, speak about that woman more, even within the world of tennis. And so when I get, you know, I have loads of kids, but I actually started a little group where it was just the girls, because it was amazing to see that I was managing to keep loads of girls in the sport. I had a group where it was like 8 girls and 2 boys. And that to me was just amazing, because you don't see that reflected in the coaching staff. You don't see it necessarily reflected when you kind of get further down the line. And I think that it would just be an amazing thing if we just make the game more diverse in general. And I think that women should be high on that list in terms of, let's push them and try and keep them into the game. You know, it's not difficult to get a racket in the girls' hands. It's more difficult to keep them engaged in the game. I think it's so interesting when you look at how tennis players learn. You can't teach tennis players one way. Generally speaking, to just like stereotype, men are generally more ego driven and women are more goal centric, right? So you have to change the way that you coach. So if you have a young girl who's doing well, you can't tell her that, you know, you want her to be the best, and that number one, you set realistic goals and you make it more manageable. You get into the brain of the person that you're coaching, so then that way you can coach them in the best way. And I think that as coaches, we need to do a better job of how we handle young women in the sport in order to increase their retention.
So yeah, Miles, again, thank you so much for joining us. Really, really like insightful chat, and like your passion really shined through like during the conversation. So we're really grateful for you joining us. I don't know if you have anything else to add, Lucy.
No, I'm just really happy that you know, he got he joined us and spoke to us about that, like, his experience and everything. He's glad, really happy to hear from you know, the board and everything, and hopefully we can get more people. But yeah, thanks again, Miles.
Yeah, cheers, Miles. And yeah, Lucy, wrapping up now. So again, because we're recording on a Saturday, upcoming events, certain draws haven't been made yet. So we do have a draw for Barcelona, which is an ATP 500. And that's pretty stacked. So you've got Rafa Nadal, who's the top seed. Stefanos Tsitsipas is the second seed. And Felix Auger-Aliassime, he's seeded 10th. All the seeds get first round byes. So Felix is looking at playing either wildcard Lorenzo Musetti or Feliciano Lopez in round two, which would be a very interesting tie or matchup. I'm going to say Musetti will beat Lopez, so I'm expecting to see Felix versus Musetti. Who do you fancy in that, Lucy?
I'll put Musetti too, but just, you never know.
Yeah. But I'm saying, as in Musetti versus Felix, who do you expect to come out on top?
Oh, I thought it was going to be about Musetti or Lopez. I don't know. The thing is that it's just the beginning of the clay season, and if I saw more of Felix during the Monte Carlo, then it would have been easy for me to judge. But at the moment, I don't know.
Yeah, because I'm going to say Massetti probably has a few more matches on clay this year. He's probably a bit more like acclimatized to like the surface. But I expect Felix to get through that, and I think he's going to want to put right the result or the disappointment of going out early in Monte Carlo. So I think he's going to be like gagging to like get back out there and get a win.
Mm-hmm.
Francis Tiafoe, he's also in the draw, so he takes on wild card Carlos Alcaraz, which is going to be insane. Like, that's a massive draw. Mm-hmm. For the fans, I'm not sure if fans will be there actually. It might be like a reduced crowd thing again.
Barcelona, I don't think so. I think they're still
because there was an event in Spain.
They have restrictions.
There was an event in Spain last week or the week before last.
I think it depends on the regions.
Okay, interesting.
The restrictions depend on the region, so not too sure.
But yeah, that's going to be a very interesting match. Francis Tiafoe, and obviously Tiafoe, he played the Golden Swing. Bless you.
Thank you.
He played the Golden Swing. You okay?
Yeah.
So yeah, Francis played the Golden Swing early in the year. So he's got some matches on clay already. So again, I'm expecting him to do quite well in Barcelona. So yeah, hopefully he gets that win over Alcaraz, who's obviously a talented player. And yeah, Joe Wilfried-Tsonga, he's also in the draw. So he plays Igor Gerasimov in the first round. And shouts out to Tsonga, actually, it was his birthday on Saturday. So happy birthday to Joe Wilfried. So yeah, that's the eighth. There's also an event happening in Serbia, in Belgrade, at the Novak, I think it's like his tennis academy, like, or his tennis center.
I know someone from his team is basically organizing it or something like that. But yeah, someone from his team are like into it.
Because he's the top seed playing in that event. I think Berrettini's the second seed. But yeah, no one from a Black Spin Global perspective is taking part. On the women's side, we've got Stuttgart happening, which is a WTA 500, so the Porsche Tennis Grand Prix. And that's pretty stacked. So you've got Ash Barty, the top seed. Simona Halep is also playing. Maria Sakkari as well. Just a load of a few players like inside the top 10, basically. A player that I'm really looking forward to, and hopefully we'll see her in the main draw, is a 17-year-old German by the name of Noma Noha Okugure. So she's German but Nigerian descent. She's ranked 787 in the world, and she already had she got a win in the first round of qualifying against Margarita Gasparian, the Russian, who's like top 100. She's like 89 in the world. Okugure beat her in straight sets. So she's literally just, as we record this anyway, she's a win away from the main draw. So hopefully she makes it. I think she's playing another like teenage German in that second round qualifying match. So it's a winnable match for her to like make again. We could have another WTA debutant, like, basically, which would be very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, good luck to Okugure in Stuttgart. And again, the draw's not been made for that. So we don't know who will be playing who. As we record this, but yeah, definitely look forward to seeing WTA Tour tennis in Stuttgart.
Yeah, definitely.
And there's also an event happening in Istanbul, which is a 250 WTA 250 event. Again, no draw yet, so we can't really speak about that, and don't know who will be competing there. But yeah, that pretty much wraps up this episode, Lucy. Don't know if there's anything else you want to add.
It's been quiet. It's been a bit quiet, so yeah.
Gearing up for the French, which has been rescheduled, which we all kind of expected. So yeah.
Defund French Open.
we look forward to seeing how that plays out.
Messing up the whole grass season, but yeah.
So yeah, I think they've robbed the week off the grass court season. So it'd be 2 weeks as opposed to three. But yeah, the main thing is Wimbledon's happening. Like Wimbledon is not budging. So
yeah, I'm just hoping that they will decide on fans.
Yeah.
Hopefully fans will be able to go. Like, I can't imagine Wimbledon without fans.
Yeah. No.
Like, can't just imagine. Like, I can't imagine it. That's the thing. I actually cannot. But I think it's a place that's quite difficult to, you know, have restrictions and stuff. But then again, you know, we don't know how things will be from between now till July. So the case has been doing really well. Like, we've been doing really well in the UK in terms of COVID anyway. So if we keep it up, we should be okay.
Everyone getting vaccinated as well. So yeah, let's just continue and we just hope things continue to improve. But yeah, guys, again, appreciate Miles for joining us on this episode. And yeah, we thank you all for listening and tuning in. And until next time, take care.